Right Radio Network. Eric Harley here. It's time for Ask the Law. Gary McNamara has the morning off. Let's see. We have law enforcement in the building, and Gary's not here. I'll just say he's on the run. 800-288-9227. I make it up as I go along. I'm Eric Harley. Get on board now at 800-288-9227. We'll get to national weather at 33 past. Top of the hour news from J.B. Hunt. And we also want to remind you this hour is brought to you by Chevron Dello and the Dello family of products. And when we get to national weather at 33 past, just keep in mind as you listen to that wonderful, wonderful forecast from Alan Skaya in our newsroom, just remember that that forecast brought to you proudly by House Lubricator, okay? This is Ask the Law for July 6, 2009, and we are here with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol, brought to you by Old Blue USA as a public service. And here's what we want you to know. All the answers to your questions are up to date. They can change without notice. Statements or comments other than those from Trooper Dial are opinions only, all right? So get on board, 800-288-9227. We would love to have you now, 800-288-9227. We'll go ahead and open the phones right now for Ask the Law. You can also go to askthelaw.org. That's the website. And all you have to do is click on the big red button that says email Ask the Law. Trooper, how are you?
I'm doing great, Derek.
You are fresh back from Vegas, are you not? You went to the Great West Truck Show recently.
Yes.
How was that?
It was great.
Yeah.
Thursday was pretty slow.
Yeah.
Which even when we have the show here in Dallas,
yeah, it's always
Thursdays are pretty slow. That's usually when a lot of the corporate officials come in.
Right.
Friday started picking up pace,
yeah.
And Saturday we were busy all day.
You know, that's awesome for a couple of reasons, because it tells me that the industry is doing a little bit better, and it also tells me, or at least they're a little more responsive to what's going on with these trade shows. But it also tells me, too, that Vegas may be doing okay, relatively well, as far as, again, being able to bring people to a show like that. That kind of show isn't doing so well these days in Vegas, and that's been the talk of the town there, of how they're suffering. And it wasn't so much, you know, the tourism dollar in Vegas relies heavily on those types of trade shows, and it has been so it's been a little bit slower. So I'm glad to hear that. And also our friends from Randall Riley took over that show.
Yes,
last year. So this year was officially their second year. And the timing obviously was bad as the recession hit. Everyone was wondering how a little show like that was going to survive. But if anybody can make it happen, they can. So.
Oh, yeah. There were, like I said, there were on Saturday, a lot of people come by.
Yeah.
We had one guy that the PA announcer came on and said the show was officially closed. And we're right in the middle of a discussion.
Wow. Okay, and that happens at 5 o'clock, right?
Yeah, at 3.
At 3 on Saturday.
Yeah, 3 o'clock on Saturday.
All right, now, here's the deal. What you need to know about this is that Las Vegas is a union town. They turn the lights out and roll up the carpets, and I'm not kidding here.
Oh, yeah.
There's no waiting. They don't care. These are union
right.
guys that are told, shut it down.
Right.
And they don't wait that people have... You know, it doesn't matter that you're still packing up or you're doing this or that. No. We were actually standing on a carpet that was essentially kind of a runway carpet in the aisles.
Right.
And they were rolling it up underneath us one year in Vegas. And they do not wait. So that's unfortunate. What were some of the most frequently asked questions from Great West Truck Show this year?
It was mainly logbooks.
Yeah.
The last one, the discussion we got in there, the last one was a gentleman was completing his log based on the speed limit
mm-hmm.
in the various states. And I was telling him, you can't do that.
Right.
So we went and I took him to an interpretation that's found in 392. And it says, of course, the interpretation was written back when the old 10-hour rule was in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And most states had 55 and 60-mile-an-hour speed limits for
right.
trucks. And I said, read this interpretation, and as you start going through it, remember that you can drive 11, and some states now have speed limits up to 75.
Mm-hmm.
So do some little calculations as you go through there. And as he read through it, and it said that drivers that are showing a mileage in the neighborhood of, say, 600 miles,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is probably something close to being normal. If somebody starts showing more miles than that, then now then it basically the red flag goes up and a DOT auditor is supposed to start asking for documents to determine whether or not the driver actually logged those miles.
Right.
And so he and I were in discussion and happened to get one of the civilians that Nevada has that is the new entrant and got him over there because he pretty much knows that area. And he sat there and asked him, he said, now, what speed do you log going up? And it was somewhere on Interstate 40
right.
going up towards Kingman. He said, now, can you log or can you drive 75 up that way? He said, no, there's no way that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
He said, by you logging your logbook at 75 miles an hour, you're falsifying your log. And so anyway, we went back and forth and you know, we're trying to prove, you know, trying to tell him, you've got to log it based on how you drive it.
Yeah, you log it as it happens.
Right. But what he was trying to do is he was trying to say, okay, 11 hours at 70 miles an hour, that's 770 miles. And we're sitting there telling him, there's no way.
You can't. You can't average 70 miles an hour.
And that's what I told him. I said, you know, what you're saying is you get in that truck, and as soon as you put it in gear, you're instantly traveling at 70 miles an hour.
Because, right, and you don't stop at all. Because if you stop for 5 minutes, that would bring your average speed down greatly.
Sure.
And this is what, and a lot of people didn't understand this when I was trying to make this point. This started years ago.
Yeah.
But I've always had the people that would email me and say, no, you got it wrong. No, I average 65, 70 miles an hour. Well, no, you don't. Because if you stop, just for a restroom break, even in a four-wheeler, where you don't have to worry about parking, you just pull up and then take care of business, get on the road, you are greatly lowering that average speed. So the average speed, I think, what AAA, I think what they calculate is like 50 miles an hour for a four-wheeler on any given trip is the average speed travel.
Right. And I told him, I said, look, for you to prove to yourself, I said, here's what you do. You get in your truck. You get your stopwatch.
Yeah.
As soon as you put that truck in first gear, you get that stopwatch. And you let that stopwatch run until you stop. Then you stop the stopwatch.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start again, you start it again.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, look how many hours it took you to drive versus the number of miles that you drove.
Right.
And I said, even in a state that has a speed limit of 70 or 75, you're going to be doing good to even get close to 65, average 65 miles an hour.
Right.
It just can't be done because you got to slow down, and you're traveling 70, and you have to slow down for any reason. It's going to take you a while to get back up to, you know, back up to 70 miles an hour again.
Right, right. When I'm in a car and I'm planning a trip next week, not this week, this week I'm going to Walcott. Next week I'm going on a personal trip. I'll be driving up to the mountains. So my brother would love me to come out to his place in West Texas and then ride with him, but that adds, you know, and I'm doing the calculations, that adds way too much time. It adds about 4 hours total to my trip, to my drive time alone, and getting home is just not going to be efficient enough for me. I need to get home sooner than that. And I'm always, when I'm in the car by myself, the challenge is, all right, and I do it like a trucker, keep the left door closed.
Yes.
That's the challenge.
Yes.
And I mean, I'll hit a drive-thru. I have taken these little coolers, the mini coolers that you use as pretty much a lunchbox, and I've packed them with one of the little gel pack things and kept sandwiches in there and drinks. So I'm only stopping every few hours you know, maybe for, you know, a restroom break, but that's pretty much it. I'm not stopping at all. If I've got my kids with me, four kids, you do the math.
Oh, yeah.
You're stopping every, you know, 5 minutes, it seems like. But this is, I think, getting back to the logbook. Now, you, in the past, you had a driver that actually said, now, what was it? They were doing 3,300 miles per week? This guy was at one point?
Yes.
All right. And then you had him, he actually showed you his logbook, showed you what he was doing.
Right. He brought his logbooks in, and we sat down and basically audited his logbooks for a month.
Right.
And went back and used the Microsoft Streets and Trips program.
Right.
And looked at the starting point,
mm-hmm.
I mean down to the physical address of the starting point.
Right.
All the stops that he made along the way to his final destination,
mm-hmm.
and that address. And then we took that mileage, not what the computer program would show
right.
as far as hours, but we would take a look at the mileage.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, we would look at how many hours it took him to drive. And like I say, he was very efficient at the way he did it.
Right.
He kept the left door closed.
Mm-hmm.
He knew where he was going to stop at,
yeah.
you know, to take his breaks so that he wasn't trying to drive around, trying to find a place. And the man could do it.
Well, and I know that it can be done. I guess the question is how efficient can you be? As an individual, how efficient as a driver can you be? How meticulous can you be about your planning? And all of this is going to come into play if the new highway bill is passed. We're going to talk about this here in a moment because there's some talk about mandatory electronic onboard recorders.
Yes.
What we know about this, what you know about it, Trooper Dial, in just a few minutes as well. And if you've got a question, hours of service, or any other regulatory items on your mind, give us a call at 800-288-9227. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here for Ask the Law. We do it every first Monday of the month, so get on board at 800-288-9227. You can also send us a text with your question, 68683-68683. So make sure you get that in, and you can always go to the website askthelaw.org, and you can email your questions there anytime. All right, get on board now. Ask the Law for July 6, 2009 on the Midnight Radio Network, 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara is off this morning. It is Ask the Law for July 6, 2009. We're here with retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol, courtesy of Old Blue USA. All of the comments and all of the questions, rather, and your answers are up to date, can change without notice. The statements or comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial on the program this morning are strictly opinion. 800-288-9227. Let's talk about this highway bill here, Trooper, and what we know about it so far. If the current form of this highway bill is passed, we'll see several things happen out of it. Two things that I think are most noteworthy. First of all, electronic onboard recorders. This is different than what was proposed back in 2007. That proposal, when it came forth, had some wiggle room, if you will, some consideration if you voluntarily put that on as a carrier, and also it was all being considered as kind of a punishment for those who were violating hours of service or had so many violations in a certain period of time. In other words, let's say you had so many within a two-year period, you would be required to have it for 2 years, right, in 2007?
Well, what happened was if FMCSA or a state partner went in and did a compliance review, and factor three, which is your hours of service, if you've got if you obtained an unsatisfactory rating, mm-hmm. they would come back within a year, do another compliance review. At that time, if factor three was still rated unsatisfactory, under the original FMCSA proposal, then the motor carrier would be required to install EOBRs on the trucks and keep them on the trucks for a minimum of 2 years. For those that chose to voluntarily put them on, FMCSA threw those carriers some bones, so that if they came in and did a compliance review, factor three was rated unsatisfactory, before they left, they would turn around, draw another pool, mm-hmm. and do another rating on factor three. So that if they just by luck happen to pick a bad set of apples,
right,
then the carrier could make available another set of logs, mm-hmm. and possibly get a satisfactory rating in factor three.
Right, but all of that essentially now has gone by the wayside. This new bill, and we'll talk about this after the break, essentially will say that across the board,
oh, yes.
all motor carriers will be required to have them within 4 years
yes.
of the enactment of this bill. So stand by for more details on that. Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol from Old Blue USA, Eric Harley, on the Midnight Radio Network. Radio Network, Eric Harley, Gary McNamara is off today, and it's Ask the Law time, 800-288-9227. All right, some text messages that have come in about electronic onboard recorders. All right, this one is something that, and I kind of had an idea in my mind how it would be done, and maybe you have a better answer. We're here with retired senior trooper Monty Dial, the Texas Highway Patrol, Ask the Law. Is courtesy of Old Blue USA. By the way, all the answers are up to date as of July 6, 2009. They can change without notice. And the comments, other than those of Trooper Dial, are opinion only. If electronic onboard recorders become mandatory, first of all, let me ask you this. This is a question that came to my mind. When you were still active, did you come across any of these? I guess they were the closest that we've ever had to electronic onboard recorders. I know some of the companies had them in place as a matter of policy. Did you deal with a lot of the electronic onboard electronic logbooks, I guess is what we call them?
They're called automatic
yeah.
or automated
yeah.
logging.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. And in fact, there was a rather large carrier
mm-hmm.
that everybody knows
mm-hmm.
that had them equipped in their trucks.
Right.
And the driver, as a requirement, was supposed to be able to retrieve the data.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped him one night to do an inspection and asked him where he was coming from, where he was going to.
Right.
And how did the company keep a record? He says, in this box right here. I said, okay, let's look at the box. He said, there it is. I said, well, you have to, the regulation says you have to be able to go back and show me.
Right.
He said, I don't know how to do it. Here's the book.
Wow.
And needless to say, he got shut down because part of the requirements are he has to have the capability of understanding, even if he has to have a book,
right,
to sit there and walk him through. He has to take, and it basically records how long he's been stopped,
right?
How long he's been driving,
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature, and he has to be able to take and retrieve the data for us, and he couldn't do it.
All right, text questions that have come in. First of all, the first basic question that came in was, how is a law enforcement official going to enforce this? Do you get up in the cab in that case?
Yes. Well, normally what I do, this particular vehicle was a day cab.
Right.
And it was mounted in such a way that you could see it standing on the running board.
Right.
Where the driver could sit there and basically, you had to have your pen and paper ready because you had to write down how much time he spent on this line, how much time he spent on this line, and how much time he spent on that line.
Right.
So you basically had to write everything down and then take it back and kind of take a sheet of paper and make a log out of it.
Sure.
So you could read it. But it was set up in such a way that if the driver would enter a code that, say he pulled up to a location to make a delivery, he would enter a code that would be that would identify that location. And if he failed to do so after a certain period of time, it would start squawking at him.
Right.
Likewise, if he started driving and the he was still in another mode, within a matter of minutes, it would start squawking at him again, and he had to physically make changes. And if he didn't, it would shut the truck down.
And that was one of the other questions that came in. If I've run to my 11 and I shut down and somebody knocks on my door, let's say at a rest area, and says I have to move that truck, what do I do? Because if electronic onboard recorder is essentially going to flag you for that, and that's going to be a permanent record in that database, is it not?
That is correct. Here again, a lot of it is going to be where the rest area is.
Okay.
I know that from doing our show here on WBAP,
mm-hmm.
We have found, I believe it's in Pennsylvania or Ohio,
right,
where they will take and pull into what they think is a rest area. We'll come to find out that's a location that the DOT sets up for inspection.
Right.
Well, when, you know, and from what I understand, there are signs posted that, you know, says, no overnight parking.
Right.
Well, in that situation there, the driver has to get up and move because they're fixing to do an inspection inspect trucks at that facility.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to flag the log as a violation.
Yeah, but you would be required to, because if you're following the letter of the law in right now in the handwritten law log, then you would be required to log that anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
So you could make a notation or whatever, and I guess the difference is that there may not be room for notation. We should point out, by the way, we don't know what the final requirement will be for equipment.
Right.
We don't know what the final requirement will look like as far as allowing for exemptions like this. Will there be any kind of notation where you could enter some information and explain what happened or anything like that?
Right.
This is just trying to look ahead and, I guess, anticipate what some of the requirements might be. The highway bill is being looked over. If, first of all, do we know when this is going to be voted on? Do we know when this will be going to Congress?
My understanding is Oberstar is trying to get this in before September the 31st.
So he wants it in for the fall session. He wants the Senate floor to take this up.
Yes, because
by then.
The current funding right now for all of the agencies under the Department of Transportation, all of their funding ends September the 30th.
Right.
So what he's trying to do is get this, that's called the White Pages, and he's trying to get it to the floor, get it debated, and get everything passed so that it will be approved to go into effect on October the 1st.
Right. All right. I want to talk about, after the break, drug testing, a national drug testing database.
Yes.
This is something we discussed on the program and got the phones hopping here recently. And by the way, if you'd like to comment or call in with a question, 800-288-9227. for Ask the Law on electronic onboard recorders or a drug testing database. Should there be a national drug testing database? Because I pointed out something that you and I, during our little pre-show get-together, were talking about. And the fact is that many of these states already have these databases set up. This already would, it essentially is kind of combining databases, putting it on a federal level. We'll talk more about what this might mean, what this might look like if the new highway bill is passed. And that's coming up here on Ask the Law. Get on board right now. It is Ask the Law for July 6, 2009. Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol is here at 800-288-9227. You can also send a text question to 68683. Make sure you put MRN as the first word. It's the Midnight Radio Network. The Midnight Radio Network, Eric Carley, and Ask the Law for July 6, 2009. We are live with retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial, the Texas Highway Patrol. If you want to get on board, you can do so. 800-288-9227, 68683 for a text. Make sure you put MRN as the first word. Ask the Law, brought to you by Old Blue USA. And we need to let you know that all of the comments, other than those of Trooper Dial, are opinion only. 800-288-9227. Again, the answers you hear on the program this morning can change without notice. Let's get to your questions on Highway 360. Danny this morning. Hi, Danny. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Good morning. How are y'all today?
Pretty good, sir. You got a question for Trooper Dial?
Yes, personal conveyance. I'm leaving the Metroplex going home to San Antonio. I will not be reloaded in San Antonio. Do I have to log any of that, or do I just make a flag and just put personal conveyance going home? Time off.
First thing, Danny, is when you get to San Antonio, where are you going from there?
Probably San Angelo or come back up to Waco.
Okay. The reason I ask is there's an interpretation in 395.8, question 26, and it gives two examples of use of a vehicle for personal conveyance. And the reason I'm asking that is I'm not going to say that you cannot use the vehicle for personal conveyance. It's just we have, as law enforcement, we have to kind of go by these interpretations. If you were to drop a trailer at a yard in, say, Dallas or Fort Worth or Waco, wherever, and you go to San Antonio and then you come back to the location where you drop the trailer, there's no if, ands, or buts about it. It's personal conveyance. But whenever you take and you're driving a trailer or towing a trailer and you're going home to San Antonio, but you have no clue where you're going from there, you might be in trouble.
Yes, sir.
So you're saying he's essentially still kind of under dispatch rule,
yes,
at that point,
right? And here again, you know, by no means am I saying the answer that I'm giving you is not a correct answer. It's just it's going to be hard to prove that you're obviously going to be empty, but the thing is, you get to San Antonio, you're now establishing a new location where you're going to go out of, whereas if you follow the interpretation, you've always got to go back to where your trailer was at.
Danny, where is home base? Is it San Antonio for you?
Yes, sir, it is San Antonio. That's my home. We're out of Kansas, but that's my house. And also, as a Qualcomm, but it's not Qualcomm, all my previous dispatches will be on there. And there's nothing that I have from coming from time off show in San Antonio. There's no freight for us there. I'll either be out of Waco or San Angelo.
So you dropped a trailer in the Dallas area and you're heading back to San Antonio?
No, sir. I drag it with me.
Okay. All right. So then you're deadheading to San Antonio?
Correct, sir. And that's out of my pocket, my cost. And so what I'm understanding from Mr. Dial, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
That's right. But here again, you know, if the company could look far enough in advance, you know, if nothing else, you know, if you normally pick a load up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, or you may even have to drop down as far as Waco, if you could find a location, say at Waco, you know, that way it gives you the option of either picking the load up in Waco or rehooking up to your tractor and, or trailer and bringing it on up into the Dallas area by virtue of dropping it in Waco. Now then, there's no questions about personal use going to San Antonio.
All right, stand by. Danny, we'll explain more after the top of the hour. Maybe we'll have some time to expand on that a little further. It's the Midnight Radio Network.